Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Afghanistan. The headline in the Washington Post tells a troubled story. Afghanistan has become a terrorism staging ground again, leak reveals. The first graph tells everything. Less than 2 years after President Biden withdrew U.S. personnel from Afghanistan, the country has become a significant coordination site for the Islamic State as the terrorist group plans attacks across Europe and Asia and conducts, quote, aspirational plotting, end quote, against the United States, according to a classified Pentagon assessment that portrays the threat as a growing security concern. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. Mary was at State during the time that the Trump administration negotiated with the Taliban in Doha, Qatar, through the offices of the Qataris, and led to an agreement February 29, 2020, that, to my understanding, was never actually fulfilled by the Taliban. There was never actually a follow-through on the promises that the Taliban made. And yet, in August of 2021, you will all remember the catastrophe, the tragedy of the sudden withdrawal of the U.S. and its allies from Afghanistan and Kabul, leading to famine, pandemic, tragedy, brutality, sadism, and now terrorism plotting again. Mary, a very good evening to you. Let's begin with two parts. First, the agreement with the Taliban. Not fulfilled is my memory. There was no negotiation between the Taliban and the Kabul government. You knew that at the time. Did you know that the Biden administration would do nothing about it and would follow through as if the agreement had been achieved, as if the Taliban was in good faith? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening to you, John. There were actually two agreements, but we never speak of the second one. The first, as you say, was a conditions-based agreement with the Taliban of both unclassified and classified agreements, which, as you correctly say, were not followed. And the second was with the Afghan government, which, of course, was led by a man who decided to run instead of stay and fight and help his people. So I think, you know, we did not take troop levels down to zero because we knew that if we did at that time, that the Afghan army was not prepared to secure the country and that it would become, as you say, yet again, a haven for terror. So I don't think that this report is a particular surprise. It is, however, still extremely disturbing on many reasons. First of all, because it only takes terrorists one time to be successful, as they were on 9/11. Of course, we've gotten better, much better, at preventing attacks like that. But there's no guarantee that we will prevent all such potential attacks. Secondly, you've seen the Chinese authorities move in and try to build relationships with the Taliban. They have a joint interest in weakening the United States and our allies. And thirdly, because you have this question that we faced after, of course, the fall of the Soviet Union, you know, loose nukes or biological and chemical weapons that fall into the hands of the wrong people and create a significant catastrophe or spark a war. So it's a disturbing situation. It doesn't, by the way, just threaten the United States. India, of course, has been the subject of cross-border terror attacks that received support from Afghanistan. And it is effectively a bet that the United States has made that the American public would tolerate this risk in exchange for focusing our forces and our attention elsewhere. I think that it's a bad bet, but I understand the instinct to get out of Afghanistan. It was 20 plus years, an enormous amount of graft, a succession of generals that did not do very much to wean the Afghan army off of our support, as we've seen. It was kind of a disaster all around. But, you know, would you trade a thousand American soldiers plus NATO forces for that sense of security? You know, some would say we should have left soldiers there. And had we done so, we wouldn't be facing not just this terrorist threat, but also the loss of 13 American service people who died defending that airport when we left.
I have a puzzling question about how Washington works, Mary, because you've worked in New York, you've worked in London, you've worked in many different cities, but Washington has one company, and it's a one company thinking. The leaked Discord messaging platform where we gain this revelation of the Pentagon saying the ISIS is a threat. And by ISIS, they mean the jihadists. It could be any version of them. And Al-Qaeda is clearly vouchsafing ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. There was a decision to make that top secret and to keep it from the American people. Mary, we have to make decisions about who our leaders are on the basis of what you only have one reason: confidence, trust. So keeping it from the American people, is that considered customary and acceptable not to tell the American people bad news when they have to go to the polls and make decisions about bad news?
Well, clearly there's far too much that's classified. I think the good news, John, is that I do think the American people know, broadly speaking, what are the greatest threats are to us. And they have far more information today than they had 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, thanks to the internet, thanks to data that can be pulled from satellites and social media and other private enterprises. It's actually quite remarkable what you can find on the internet these days. But it is in some of these, you know, key details, as you rightly highlight. You know, is it a surprise that there's a terror threat from Afghanistan? No. Is it a surprise that you would find regimes that you think would be oppositional to one another cooperating? Yes, that is a surprise. And yes, that should be discussed with the American public. I think one of our challenges is that much of our public debate in recent years has been around domestic issues, and much of our media is based in the United States and doesn't have much experience abroad or in war zones. And so if you flip on your nightly news, you know, 85, 90%, maybe more of it is going to be all about the United States. We're a big country. We've got a lot going on. But I think that's a choice by media executives. And I think it does the American people no favors, particularly at a time when we see the multiplicity of threats emerging across a very wide geography in a very concerning manner and in a cooperative manner, as we've discussed on prior shows.
I want to stay in the world island in Eurasia and go east, not west. I want to go to Taiwan. In these last days, there's news that Taiwan again is being threatened by the People's Republic of China, threatening Taiwan, threatening the Philippines. But there's a contest underway that doesn't require guns. It's about diplomatic recognition. And Taiwan has been losing one by one the few that have relationships between Taipei and their capitals. And the reason they're losing is not because Taipei's done anything wrong, but because the People's Republic of China is using influence peddling, cash, brutality, intimidation. We saw Honduras switch from Taipei to Beijing, and immediately the new president of Honduras received an invitation to Beijing. And according to some in the Northern Triangle, there was cash involved. Now we have another election coming up within days in Paraguay. And the choice is said by Reuters reporting to be between a candidate who's going to switch from Taipei, where the relations are now between Asuncion and Taipei, going to switch to Beijing. At the State Department, Mary, was there what was the understanding that we can't do anything about this, that we can't reverse China's intention? We shouldn't challenge them directly. How do you think about it? Because these are soft power moves that China's winning.
Well, to be brutally honest, John, the State Department has largely ignored Central and South America as a theater of strategic competition between the United States and nations like not just China, but Iran and Russia as well, that also have presences there. My then boss, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, visited Paraguay in April of 2019. He was the first Secretary of State in a half century to set foot in the country. I mean, that's just really remarkable when you think about it. What could be more important than protecting our influence in our hemisphere, in our backyard? Paraguay is an important partner to us. They repudiated Maduro's quote-unquote election in Venezuela and recognized the democratic aspirations of the Venezuelan people. They are the only country to recognize Taiwan in South America diplomatically. So they take courageous stances, but they are constantly under threat and money talks. And the Chinese work very, very hard to identify openings where they can chip away at the legitimacy of Taiwan in the diplomatic space or otherwise. And unfortunately, we just do not have a strategic vision for what we want our relationship with South America to look like and what we're willing to offer them to draw closer to us. You know, one of our greatest attractions is, of course, immigration. You know, letting people educate their kids here or come here legally, apply for visas, aspire to a better life. It's trade, creating jobs in both nations, ours and places like Paraguay. And yet the Trade Representative Office in this current U.S. administration has been fairly hamstrung, hasn't really done any big deals, hasn't put out kind of a vision for what are the sorts of trade agreements that we could get done and get done quickly and that would challenge China and put them on the back foot? Because many of these nations, Paraguay or others, would prefer to do business with the United States. It's easier. It's more predictable. We employ their people when we bring businesses into the region. So I think it's a shame. I think it's a failure of vision and a failure of leadership, both at the State Department, but also at the White House. And I fear that we're going to wake up one day and we're going to see that nations in our backyard, excluding only Canada, will be largely under Chinese influence. And that brings with it a host of threats to our standing in the world, to our dominance in the region, to our national security here at home.
So it is a story in Washington, as of yet, not done effectively. I mentioned one other detail, Solomon Islands, where we do now have an embassy that's been reopened. Solomon Islands has switched from Taipei to the People's Republic of China because of one man, the Prime Minister Sogavare, who delayed this year's election till 2024. China's openly using influence there. And that is the first island chain. That is the South China Sea. It's outside the South China Sea, but on the passageway to the South China Sea. We're looking at not just South America and Central America. We're looking at over the Indo-Pacific as well. Is the whole story a priority at state? Or are we just focusing on China, the mainland, and ignoring how China's moving people towards its corner in the Taiwan dispute?
Well, I don't think we're ignoring how China's influence is exerted around the world. When we were in office, we stood up so-called China watchers within the State Department and put them in various regions all over the world to focus regional attention on what was going on and to report back to Washington. I think where this breaks down is it doesn't matter if you're getting, lots of data and great information back in Foggy Bottom if nobody does anything about it. You see lots of gestures, For instance, the so-called Blue Dot Network, which no one in the United States has heard of, but a few people in Washington think is really awesome. And that was, I think, started under our administration, continued in this one. But it really is, you know, not very effective. It's supposed to encourage countries to use U.S. companies and other free nation companies to build critical infrastructure to kind of kick China out of that game. But you don't see any meaningful inroads there. But everybody likes to talk about it in policy circles. It's kind of a non-starter. If we were really serious about getting into that business, then we would put incentives in place for American entrepreneurs to get in the game. And we'd give them, you know, tax breaks and help in identifying opportunities. And we deploy our economic staff and fan them out all over the region looking for deals. And we'd approach private banks and say, what can you finance? And, you know, how can we do this? That is going on in Washington. And I'm fairly cynical that it will until it's too late.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. We've been speaking of soft power, that's State Department. When we come back, hard power, Ukraine, and the president's reelection announcement in a video package in these last hours. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.